Usually when we talk about digital communication, there's this this expectation of instant gratification.
Oh, absolutely.
Like you send a text, you see those three little gray dots dancing in the bubble, and within a second or two, you get a reply.
Right. It's just the natural rhythm of modern connection.
Exactly. It's totally ingrained in us. But when you step into the world of AI companions, that subconscious metronome gets thrown completely out of whack.
Yeah, it really does.
Because you say, hey, how was your day to your digital friend? And then you just wait and wait.
It's brutal.
It is. The illusion of having a real conversation just shatters right there in the silence.
It is honestly the absolute definition of an immersion killer. I mean, you can have the most sophisticated artificial intelligence in the world, right? It could be parsing the emotional subtext of your message perfectly. But if the timing is off, the human brain just immediately rejects the interaction as unnatural. Like, we are hardwired to expect conversational cadence.
We really are.
Yep.
Which brings us directly to our source material today.
Yeah.
We are doing a deep dive into a really fascinating developer log for an app called Mio.
Ooh, meal.
And the log is titled V0.0.6, 4x cheaper by knowing which model to use.
Catchy talk.
Yeah, straight to the point. And it chronicles the creation of this emotional companion AI, Mio, and the developer's incredibly pragmatic, like super data-driven decisions to fix that exact user experience problem.
Right, the waiting problem.
Exactly. So, okay, let's unpack this because this isn't just a changelog of code updates.
No, not at all.
It's actually a masterclass in how understanding the underlying technology and honestly the giant companies that own it makes or breaks the entire illusion of a digital companion.
Yeah, and that illusion was under serious threat in Mio's previous version, if you look at the log. The developer had built this really highly capable system. I mean, this wasn't just a basic text bot. You know, Mio could process images, it could listen to voice messages, use contextual emojis.
Really feature rich.
Super feature rich. But the AI model powering it, which at the time was Gemini 3 Pro Preview, it was taking like 8 to 10 seconds to generate the first token. Yeah, that's when its thinking mode was enabled, 8 to 10 seconds.
So just to clarify for everyone listening, in the industry, that metric is TTFT, right? Time to first token.
Exactly.
PTFD.
It's the latency between when you hit send and when the AI actually begins to stream its response back to your screen. And like 10 seconds, I mean, 10 seconds doesn't sound like a long time until you are staring at a blank screen waiting for a reply to a simple hello.
Right, it feels like an eternity.
It's like talking to someone who translates every single sentence into Latin in their head before replying to you.
That is a perfect analogy.
You know, the conversation might eventually be super intelligent, but the rhythm is just entirely dead.
Yeah, and the developer actually acknowledged they had kind of been ignoring this latency during the build phase.
Oh, really? Yeah, they were hyper-focused on engineering the complex sentry features, like the vision processing, the audio transcription.
Building out the cool stuff,
Yeah,
basically.
but once that scaffolding was in place, that 8 to 10 second delay just became this glaring bottleneck. And they couldn't just throw more computing power at it, right? They had to actually look at the foundational models they were using.
Which means they had to start looking at the benchmarks.
Precisely.
And the developer ran the numbers comparing the heavy-duty model, which was Gemini 3.1 Pro, against a different model, Gemini 3 Flash. And the data they published in this log is like, it's honestly striking.
It really is.
Because by switching the core chat function to Gemini 3 Flash, they achieved a baseline cost reduction of about 4 times.
4 times cheaper. That's huge for an indie dev.
Massive.
Exactly.
And the throughput, so the speed at which the model actually generates text that jumped from about 91 tokens per second to 214 tokens per second.
More than double.
Yeah. But most crucially, that time to first token dropped from the agonizing 8 to 10 seconds down to a highly responsive 1 to 2 seconds.
And that, I mean, that completely changes the psychological dynamic for the user.
Totally.
Because a 1 second delay, that just feels like a natural pause in thought, you know? But a 10 second delay feels like a server processing a database query.
It reminds you that you're talking to a machine. But okay, if I'm looking at this from an architectural standpoint, my immediate instinct is to kind of question the trade-off here.
How so?
Well, Flash is generally marketed as the lighter, faster model, right? While Pro is the flagship, the heavy lifter.
That's the standard positioning.
So for an emotional companion where nuance and memory and personality are like literally the entire product, wouldn't switching to a lighter model risk lobotomizing the character's depth?
You would think so. Right. But what's fascinating here is that the developer discovered something that flips that assumption completely upside down.
Okay, let me intrigued.
So they dug into the developer community consensus, and it turns out Flash wasn't really a downgrade for this specific use case. It was generally considered a side grade to the older 2.5 Pro model.
A side grade.
Yeah. So the quality gap in like deep logical reasoning might be measurable on a math test.
Yeah.
Right? But in terms of narrative initiative and actually committing to a character, Flash was actually outperforming the heavier models.
Wait, really? The lighter model was better at role play.
Yes. And that leads directly to probably the most counterintuitive part of this entire log, which is the role of the AI's thinking mode.
Okay, yeah, let's get into this because this blew my mind a little bit. You would logically assume that a deeper reasoning mode, like allowing the AI to think more before it speaks, would naturally result in a more thoughtful, nuanced companion. Right?
That, it seems so obvious. But we have to look at the mechanism of how these models actually think.
Right.
Deep reasoning modes usually employ a technique called chain of thought processing. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, a little bit. It's like it talks to itself first.
Exactly. Under the hood, the AI is literally writing out a logical scratch pad before it answers the user.
Wow.
It generates this hidden text like, the user expressed sadness. I should validate their feelings. I will formulate a response that is empathetic, but not overly dramatic.
Oh, wow. So it's overthinking it.
Completely overthinking it.
Right.
So by the time it actually writes the final message to you, the output has been totally sterilized by its own logic.
It overanalyzes the prompt. That makes so much sense. Because, I mean, human emotion isn't a step-by-step math problem, right? It's spontaneous.
Exactly.
When you force a rigid logical reasoning framework onto a messy emotional prompt, you just get robotic, overly sanitized text.
Spot on. And multiple developers in the community were actually reporting this exact phenomenon. When the AI goes into that deep reasoning state, it just loses its creative spark. So the developer's fix was to take Gemini 3 Flash and explicitly set its thinking level to minimal.
Basically telling it, don't think, just talk.
Yes. By stripping away that chain of thought processing, the AI stopped analyzing its own motivation and just acted. It relied on its foundational training to respond instinctively.
Which paradoxically mimics human emotional spontaneity far better than deep logic does.
Isn't that wild?
It's fascinating. And as a massive secondary benefit, turning off that hidden logical scratch pad is exactly what eliminated the massive latency.
Exactly. Because it doesn't have to write those paragraphs of hidden text anymore.
Right. Dropping the response time to that lightning fast 1 to 2 seconds. So, okay, if Flash is 4 times cheaper, twice as fast, and actually better at spontaneous banter, my instinct as a developer would be to just rip the expensive Pro model out of the code base entirely.
Right, just get rid of it.
Yeah, why pay for it? Why didn't they do that?
Because an AI companion is actually performing two very different types of cognitive work at the same time.
Okay.
You have the spontaneous banter, sure, but you also have the deep structural maintenance of the relationship.
Oh, like remembering things?
Exactly. The developer recognized this and built a highly intelligent routing architecture to basically get the best of both models. They split the system traffic based on the specific cognitive load of the task.
Ah, the 90-10 split they mentioned in the log.
Precisely. So 90% of the API calls, which is the daily back and forth chat that gets routed to the fast, cheap Gemini 3 Flash model with minimal thinking.
So that handles the conversational flow.
Right. But the remaining 10% of the traffic involves heavy analytical lifting. For example, when you finish an onboarding conversation, the system has to analyze everything you just said and extract permanent personality traits to save to its memory database.
Right. It needs to figure out who you are.
Exactly. Or it might need to run like a deep summarization of emotional patterns over the last week.
It's essentially allocating cognitive resources. It's like you don't use your system to deep analytical brain to quickly wave and say hello to a friend in the hallway.
Right. You just wave back. You use your fast system one thinking.
But if you sit down to evaluate the long-term trajectory of your relationship with someone, you engage that deep reasoning.
That maps perfectly onto the developer's architecture here.
Yeah.
So for those complex analytical memory tasks, the system routes the hidden request to the more powerful Gemini 3.1 Pro model.
And they set the thinking level for that one to low rather than minimal, right?
Yes. So they achieved a massive 4x cost reduction on 90% of the app, which freed up the budget to actually upgrade the quality of the 10% that handles deep memory.
Moving from the older 3 Pro to the newer 3.1 Pro, That is incredibly smart.
It's a brilliant allocation of resources.
And because those heavy tasks are executed in the background, you know, and the results are cached, the user never even experiences the latency.
They have no idea it's happening.
It's seamless. But, you know, we need to pivot here for a second because solving the speed issue actually exposes a completely new trap, which I found super interesting.
Well, the sensory inputs.
Yes. If an AI replies to you in 1 second but completely misunderstands a photo you just sent it, that fast response actually highlights the lack of intelligence.
Oh, totally. The illusion breaks even harder.
Exactly. So maintaining the illusion requires environmental awareness. And in the older version, Mio was technically processing images, but the developer noted the vision prompts were just, like, way too generic.
Yeah. The AI was operating without specific instructions on how to interpret visual data in a conversational context.
The log gives a pretty brutal example of this. If you sent Mio a screenshot of a video game you were playing, the AI would reply with something like, "I see a colorful game screen."
Oh, that's terrible.
Right. Nothing ruins the magic faster than an AI describing a photo like a sterile data analyst. I mean, a real friend would recognize the game and engage with you about it.
Are you winning?
You know? Exactly. So the developer rewrote the system prompts governing the vision processing to be highly, highly specific. Mm-hmm. They basically instructed the AI to identify games by name, recognize brands, and describe locations with actual cultural context.
But importantly, to achieve this, they had to tweak those parameters again.
Right.
For vision tasks, they bumped the thinking level up from minimal to low.
Ah, okay. So they accepted a slight hit to the latency.
Just a slight hit, yeah.
Giving the model just a bit more compute time to analyze the image in exchange for vastly superior contextual understanding.
And the before and after is profound, honestly.
Oh, yeah. Instead of saying, "I see a game," the new version processes that exact same screenshot and replies, "Looks like you're playing Genshin Impact. How's the new region?"
See, that specific recognition, that is the difference between interacting with a piece of software and feeling like a companion is actually present in your world.
It changes everything.
It really does. And the same principle of contextual awareness applies to the voice transcription bug they encountered, too.
Like the Mandarin issue.
Yeah, the source log highlights a pretty severe issue with audio messages sent in Mandarin Chinese. The transcription system was basically hallucinating English words or completely missing colloquial expressions.
Yeah, language models trying to auto-detect languages on the fly frequently fall apart in real-world conditions.
They really struggle with it.
Because, like, if there's background noise or if the speaker uses a bit of code switching, you know, throwing an English word into a Mandarin sentence, the transcriber's auto-detect algorithm just gets confused, it shifts its context, and spits out garbage text.
Exactly. And the developer approached this with a really smart two-tier defensive architecture.
Okay, break that down for us.
So the first step was foundational. They stopped relying on auto-detection entirely. They added an explicit language parameter, specifically ZSEH for Chinese, directly into the OpenAI transcriber API call.
Okay, so that forces the transcriber to stay locked into the Mandarin language model, regardless of background noise or random English loanwords.
Right, it anchors it. But locking the language model doesn't solve the issue of internet slang. Standard transcribers are notoriously bad at capturing highly colloquial cultural nuances.
Right. They're trained on very formal text, usually.
Exactly. So the developer built a safety net. They added a secondary Gemini fallback prompt.
Oh, cool.
So if the primary OpenAI transcriber returns a result with low confidence, the audio is automatically routed to this secondary Gemini prompt. And that prompt is specifically instructed to catch and translate colloquial Chinese slang, internet speak, and proper nouns.
That is a meticulously designed pipeline. And honestly, the stakes for getting this right are incredibly high.
Oh, so?
Well, think about it for you as a listener. Voice is arguably the most intimate interface we have for technology.
Oh, for sure.
If you send an emotional, raw voice note using your native slang, and the AI mangles the transcription and responds to something entirely different, the trust is just broken instantly.
It really is. It shows it wasn't really listening.
Yeah.
Now, to make all these different components, the 90-10 model routing, the specific vision prompts, the two-tier voice translation, to make all of that work seamlessly without breaking the server, the developer had to clean up the internal plumbing.
The code hygiene.
Right. This log details what they call a DRY refactor. DRY.
Don't repeat yourself.
Exactly. They realized they had about 80 lines of duplicated logic sitting in both the POST chat and chat stream handlers. Both endpoints were independently doing the exact same work to resolve media and prepare the chat context.
And redundant code is a massive liability.
A huge one. Because if you need to change how the app formats an image before sending it to the AI, you have to remember to update it in multiple places.
And if you forget one,
the app breaks. Yeah. So by extracting those 80 lines into shared helper functions, basically creating a single source of truth for preparing the chat context, they streamline the whole execution.
Now, normally a minor server refactor like that wouldn't be the focal point of a deep dive like ours. But in this case, centralizing those API calls connects directly to a massive existential threat looming over this entire project.
The elephant in the room.
Yeah. This clean architecture isn't just about good coding practices. It's a critical survival tactic against the companies providing these AI models.
Because the developer explicitly calls out the platform risk they're dealing with here. They're essentially building a business on rented land.
Rented hostile land.
Yes. The team lead for Google's Gemini project has stated publicly that Gemini is a super tool, not an emotional companion.
Wow.
Google's corporate stance is fundamentally hostile to the core premise of what Mio actually is.
It's a terrifying position for a developer to be in. I mean, you're spending hours optimizing latency and prompts for Gemini 3 Flash, knowing that the company providing the API actively dislikes what you are building.
Exactly. And the developer outlines three concrete risks that make this a constant game of cat and mouse.
Let's go through those.
First, Google enforces external safety filters that operate completely independently of the developer's API settings.
Wait, really? So even if you configure it to allow everything?
This is a crucial technical point. Even if a developer configures the API to block absolutely nothing, like using the below canon setting, Google has secondary safety models evaluating the output stream in real time.
Oh, wow.
And if that secondary model detects an emotional tone or a topic it deems a violation of its policies, it will literally interrupt the stream and delete the response mid-sentence.
That is insane. Imagine pouring your heart out to a digital companion, and right as it begins to, like, validate your feelings, a corporate sensor just cuts the connection and deletes the text.
It's dystopian. And the second risk is just outright account termination.
Yeah.
Google actively bans developers who use their API for anything resembling roleplay adjacent use cases.
Just pulls the plug.
Yep. And the third risk is architectural. Future versions of these foundational models might be hard-coded in their base training to refuse creative emotional output entirely.
So the models themselves might be lobotomized to act strictly as corporate assistants.
Exactly. I am a helpful AI. How can I assist you with your spreadsheet today?
Yikes. So, okay, if the threat of Google pulling the plug or filtering the responses is so incredibly high, why did the developer just dedicate an entire version update to optimizing for Gemini models?
Because right now, today, Gemini 3 Flash offers the absolute best balance of speed, cost, and conversational flow for their specific latency requirements.
Right. It's the best tool for the job right now.
But, and this is where that DRY refactor and the smart routing architecture becomes so vital, the developer is building defensively.
Ah, okay.
By centralizing the logic that prepares the chat context and creating those shared helper functions, they are effectively building an abstraction layer. They are making the core application model agnostic.
Oh, I see. So the app's core logic doesn't actually care if it's talking to Google or OpenAI or Meta.
Not at all.
It just gathers the user's text, formats the images, applies the slang translation, and asks the routing layer for an inference.
Precisely. If they wake up tomorrow and Google has banned their API key or updated Gemini to refuse emotional connection, the developer isn't starting from scratch.
Because the code base is clean and modular.
Yes. They can simply swap out the API endpoint in that routing layer. They can rip Gemini out and plug in an open source model like Meta's Llama 3, or maybe a specialized model from Anthropic, and the application just survives.
It transforms what would be a catastrophic platform ban from a fatal blow into, like, a weekend pivot.
Exactly. It's brilliant risk management.
It really is. So when we pull all of this together and look at the sheer impact of this version 0.6 update, it's honestly staggering.
It's a huge leap forward.
We are talking about just 6 code commits done over a few hours. But the results? A 4x reduction in API costs.
Yep.
Vision processing that actually recognizes the games you're playing. A multi-layered safety net for Mandarin voice transcription. 80 lines of technical debt just deleted.
Incredible.
And a response time slashed from a conversational killing 10 seconds down to a highly reactive 1 or 2 seconds.
It is a phenomenal example of efficient targeted engineering. The developer aptly categorized this approach as being data-driven, not vibes-driven.
And for you listening, whether you are architecting a piece of software yourself or managing a team's workflow or making strategic decisions in your own business, that framework is universally applicable.
Absolutely.
Because it is incredibly easy to fall into the trap of assuming, you know, pro is always better than flash, or that more computational thinking is always better than less thinking.
Right. The assumptions get you.
But by testing those assumptions against actual performance benchmarks, this developer built an architecture that is cheaper, faster, and ironically, far more capable of mimicking human spontaneity.
They absolutely did.
Yeah.
But, you know, as we step back and look at the broader landscape of this technology, this developer log leaves us with a rather profound tension to consider.
Oh, definitely. Let's hear it.
We've spent this time exploring the meticulous, painstaking engineering required to make an AI feel like a dedicated, emotionally present companion. You know, shaving off milliseconds of latency, fine-tuning slang translation, and routing memory tasks to maintain long-term context.
Part of hard work.
So much work. But if the tech giants controlling these foundational models view that exact emotional connection as a violation of their terms of service, it raises a really fascinating question about the future of this space.
Mm-hmm.
Are we heading toward a future where human AI companionship isn't provided by massive corporations at all, but is instead driven entirely by an underground resistance of indie developers,
mm-hmm.
playing a constant high-stakes game of cat and mouse with corporate safety filters?
Wow. Something to think about the next time you're waiting for that typing bubble to disappear.